Welcome to a new podcast of my microcurrent and frequency-specific microcurrent channel, FSM for short. I'm glad you are here. So today I will look at some statistics and over the last years, and I see something very clearly. The episode that cover fundamental frequently asked questions about microcurrent therapy or FSM are among the most listened to. At the same time, very specific topics like lymphatic issues, neuropathic pain, or the diaphragm are also get a lot of attention. That tells me two things. On the one hand, there is a strong and ongoing interest in microcurrent therapy and FSM. On the other hand, there are still a lot of question marks and quite a few myths. This is exactly today's episode about. So, for this episode, I've brought along the 7 most common myths about microcurrent and FSM that I repeatedly encounter in daily practice, in seminars, conversation with therapists and physicians, in emails, and of course in feedback to this podcast. And don't worry, this is not going to be a sales pitch and certainly not a promise of healing. It's a sober practical reality check. We'll look at what is behind this myth and where there is a small grain of truth and where they are simply no longer matched to the current state of clinical use and available researches of microcurrent and FSM. So if you are already using microcurrent or FSM in your practice, you'll get more clarity and better arguments today. And if you have been skeptical so far, you get a structured overview that helps you from your own opinion. So let's dive right into the myth number one. Number one is, microcurrent is just another form of conventional electrical stimulation. This is one of the most frequent sentences, and I hear when someone comes across microcurrent therapy for the first time. So it's just another device that delivers current like TENS or classical electrotherapy. I know that already. I don't need it. That reaction is understandable, but it falls short of what microcurrent actually is. Classical electrotherapy and TENS usually work with much higher current intensities that are clearly prescribable for the patient, sometimes quite strongly. The therapeutic idea there is usually the trigger to the muscles, contractions, modulate pain through the gate control mechanism, or stimulate specific nerve structures. Microcurrent operates in a completely different range. The currents used are in the microampere range, so we are talking about levels that are orders of magnitude below the usual perception threshold. The focus is not on the producing a strong, noticeable stimulus, but on influencing biophysical and biochemical processes at the cellular level. In experimental works and studies, we see, for example, or for researchers have investigated to what extent microcurrent can affect ATP production, membrane potential, tissue regulation, and healing processes. What's important here is this. Microcurrent is not electrostimulation 2.0. It's a distinct therapeutic approach with a different target and a different dose logic. In every practice, this means you don't use microcurrent because you want the patient to feel something. You use it to support regulatory processes in the tissue, always embedded in an overall treatment concept, for sure. So, if you have been thinking this is just another electrical gadget, it's worth putting that myth aside and considering microcurrent therapy as its own therapeutic pillar. Myth number two. If the patient doesn't feel anything, nothing is happening. This is probably the second biggest classic. Many patients are used to feeling something during treatment, whether it's TENS, ultrasound, or minor therapy. They expect a sensation, tingling, vibration, pressure, stretch, warmth. Microcurrent is different. If you are working in a physiological microampere range, the patient is usually not supposed to feel anything or only a few little. And that can easily cause skepticism, for sure. I don't feel anything, it's actually doing anything. From a therapeutic point of view, it's critical that to manage exacerbation early. Microcurrent is not a show effect therapy. The aim is not to create as much sensation as possible, but to modulate processes in the background. Inflammation, circulation, tissue tone, pain processing, and so on. In many practices, it has proven useful to combine microcurrent therapy with objective or at least traceable observation parameters. For example, range of motion before and after treatment, palpal tissue tension, degree of swelling, pain ratings on a scale, and of course functional tests. When microcurrent is used in a serious structured way, this is exactly what it is about. Not spectacular effects during the application, but measurable, at least clearly observable change over the time. So in many cases, it's more of a communication problem than a fundamental issue with the method. If you explain to your patient from the start that not feeling anything with microcurrent is completely normal and in fact desired, you remove a lot of skepticism from the treatment. Myth number three. Microcurrent is only useful for acute sports injuries. This myth often comes from people working in sports medicine and orthopedics. Many first encounter microcurrent in cases like acute sprain, muscle fiber tears, constitution, or postoperative swelling. And yes, for acute injuries, the musculoskeletal system, microcurrent can be a very interesting tool, but that's far from the whole picture. In clinical practice, microcurrent is used in a range of different areas, always as a part of an overall therapeutic concept and always within the indications. For example, chronic pain syndromes, including neuropathic pain, myofascial disorders and muscle chain problems, lymphatic issues such as edema and impaired drainage, functional disturbances in breathing, especially when a diaphragm is involved. What here matters is a clinical interpretation. Microcurrent does not replace thorough diagnostics, and it's not a standalone solution for complex conditions. However, it can be a valuable building block in a multi-model treatment concept, along with manual therapy, exercise therapy, medication prescribed by physicians, psychological support, and more. If you filled microcurrent away on the tool for acute sport injuries only, you may be missing opportunities in other areas where chronic dysregulation, inflammatory processes, or neuropathic components play a major role. Myth number four. FSM is esoteric. People just select frequencies based on institution. This myth is especially about frequency-specific microcurrent therapy, called FSM. From the outside, FSM can look a bit confusing at first. You see different frequencies, people talk about conditions and tissues, protocols get created, and if you've never seen how it's done, it can easily give the impression that frequencies are chosen randomly or based on purely on good feelings. In reality, FSM is built around a structured concept. Specific frequencies are associated with specific conditions and tissues. The idea is to address both the pathology, physiological background of the clinical problem and the structures that are likely involved and dysregulated. In practice, this means, for example, you analyze the clinical picture as carefully as you can. Which instruments are likely involved? What processes are out of control? Are they inflammatory, neuropathic, myofascial, or anatomic components? On that basis, you select frequency combinations that correspond to these conditions and tissue. The protocols are not just pulled out of thin air, they are based on accumulated experiences, documented cases, series, and in some instances, scientific studies as well. Of course, as in any field of medicine, there is a spectrum. Some practitioners work in a very structured, well-documented way, others more loosely and intuitively. This decisive factor is how you personally handle it. If you use FSM grounded in pathophysiological with documentation, follow-up and realistic expectation, it's very far away from esotericism. Like any therapeutic method, FSM is a tool. How serious and credible it appears, it depends heavily on how seriously it is applied. Yes, for sure. Let's go over to myth number 5. Mycocond is a legal gray zone. This myth touches on a topic that many clinic and practice owners worry about. Legal frameworks, medical device regulation, quality management, audits, liability, and so on. Especially if someone has had bad experiences in past with dubious devices or poorly documented methods, it's easy to conclude this microcurrent stuff can't really be legally sound. Here, it is important to differentiate it. A medical microcurrent system, and here I will give a, it's important to recognize that you have in Europe, it must be an clearly documented medical device, and it has to be listed in the EudaMed database. So it's simple for any doctor, practitioner, or physiotherapist to look if the device is clearly a medical device, because if it's not, it is not allowed to use it in clinical practice. Yes. So, let's go over. A medical mitochondrial system is, simply put, a medical device. It is a medical device. That means it has to meet specific regulatory requirements, depending on its risk class, intended purpose, and the application area. This includes conformity assessment, technical documentation, and quality processes on the manufacturer side. Even if the device is imported, for example, from the US, there should be a legal importer, a representative in Europe, and he or she or the company have to make all these quality and regulatory stuff processes and have to be listed in the EudaMed database. On the user side, further topics come into play, such as operator responsibilities and obligations, proper training and instructions, use with the boundaries of relevant professional regulations, compliance with the healthcare advertising laws and professional codes in communication and marketing. So microcurrent is not automatically a legal gray area. It really depends on which device you are using and what the quality and documentation look like and how you embed into the legal and organizational framework of your practice. So please use only legal medical devices, especially in Europe with the new MDR, the medical device regulation. It's quite important because you can be charged a lot. If you work with an approved, properly documented medical device that has a clearly intended purpose, if you inform patient honestly and do not make any promises of cure, you are not operating in a vacuum. Problems arise mainly where devices are used without a clear medical purpose, without proper documentation or training, or whether exaggerated and legally problematic claims are made in marketing. So it's worth taking a close look when you choose a system and not dismissing microcurrent therapy prematurely as a legal gray zone. Myth number 6. It's all far too complicated for everyday practice. This miss often comes from therapists and physicians who are already very busy, very fully booked, scheduled, limited time, high documentation requirements. The concern is understandable. If I had microcurrent or FSR on top of everything else, I'd spend all day at the device and lose control of my schedule. That's a reasonable worry if you see microcurrent as something completely separated from the existing workflow. But in practice, a stepwise structured approach usually works much better. One possible path could look like this. Step 1. Define one or two typical clinical pictures where microcurrent fits well into your existing concept, for example, a classic musculoskeletal complaint or recurring lymphatic problems. Step 2. In these cases, start with simple standardized protocols instead of trying to use the full range of options from day 1. Step 3. Document the procedures the time required and the outcomes. After a few weeks or months, you will have a realistic picture of how well the method fits into your day-to-day work. Over time, routine develops, just as it did with every other method you once learned and integrated in your practice. Of course, microcurrent requires a certain amount of training and familiarization. You need to understand the device, know the parameters, master topical protocols, and know which patients you need to be cautioned or where clearly contraindications exist. But it does not have to be complicated, provided you consistently integrate it into existing workflows instead of treating it as an extra condition side on the side. Many practitioners even reported that microcurrent, when properly embedded, can reduce stress in some cases because a certain clinical situation becomes more structured and manageable. Myth number 7. There is no descent data on microcurrent. This is a point that especially colleagues with a strong scientific focus are concerned about, and it's good that this question is being asked. Of course it is. The sober answer is, the body of evidence on microcurrent is not comparable with the volume of data from large pharmaceutical programs or high standardized mainstream procedures. Expecting the same quality of data here would be not realistic. However, people often jump from there are fewer studies than in some other fields to there is no data at all. And that is simply not true. There are experimental studies, case series, clinical studies, and documented clinical experience that look at various aspects of microcurrent therapy. For example, effects on pain, inflammation, inflammatory processes, wound healing, or the function of specific structures. More important than the sheer number of studies is the question, how do you as a clinician work with the evidence that is available? A few useful guidelines might be, look closely at what question a study actually answered and what does it not answer. Check how comparable the patient population and the setting are to your own patients and your own practice. Combine the available scientific data with your clinical experience and your patient's feedback. Communicate transparently and talk about indications, observings, and clinical experience, not guarantees or promises of cure. Microcurrent is a field where further research is both necessary and desirable, but saying there is no decent data at all is not accurate. The key is to interpret the existing evidence so soberly, integrate it into your overall treatment approach, and remain open to the possibility that future data may confirm or challenge your current assumptions. So let's go over to the conclusion and outlook. Let's briefly summarize the 7 myths. First, microcurrent is not simply just another form of TENS or electrotherapy. It's a distinct approach focused on regulatory processes in the microampere range. Second, The fact that a patient does not feel anything during the treatment is normal and it's intended in microcurrent therapy. What matters are the changes over time, not the sensation during the session. Microcurrent is not limited to acute spot injuries. Used appropriately, it can be a complementary component in a variety of clinical situations. Fourth, FSM is not an esoteric gut feeling therapy. It can be understood as a structured frequency specific approach where it is applied with sound knowledge of pathophysiologically and with proper documentation. Fifth, microcurrent is not inherently a legal gray zone. The decisive factors are the quality of the medical device, the compliance with operator obligations, and serious legal compliant communication. Sixth, integrating microcurrent into everyday practice does not have to be complicated if you proceed step by step and start with clearly defined clinical scenarios. Seventh, there is data on microcurrent therapy, perhaps not in the volume some would like, but enough to engage with in the meaningful way and combine with the clinical experiences. If you have listened this so far, you are probably someone who take your work seriously and it's genuinely interested in developing the therapeutic toolbox in thoughtful way, in a thoughtful way, and that's exactly who this podcast is for. If you are new here and you would like to dive deeper, especially recommended in the episode on FSM fundamentals or the most frequently asked questions about microcurrent therapy and some of the clinical examples episode where we talk about topics like lymphatic issues, neuropathic pain or diaphragm, you will find many details there that build on what we have discussed today. To wrap up, I have one small question. If this episode has helped you sort out some myths and see things more clearly, I'd really appreciate if you want to subscribe our podcast, leave a rating or share this episode with colleagues who might be also be interested in microcurrent or FSM. And of course, look in Instagram. We are in Instagram at hashtag Luxamed. It is LUXXMED. And it's a specific topic you would like to have separate episodes, maybe a particularly clinical condition, or you have a question about integration microcurrent into your workflow or scientific aspects you want to example, feel free to send us a message. I collected these questions and used them regularly as a basis for a new episode. So would be nice if you can send me some comments. And now I have to say thank you very much for listening. I wish you a thoughtful and well-structured approach to microcurrent and FSM in your daily practice, and I look forward to have you with me again in the next episode.